It's Lars. Thank you for checking out my podcast, and have a great day.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'll get back to your phone calls and emails shortly at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. And a lot of attention is being paid to the idea of decriminalizing heroin. Oregon has done it. Other states are considering it. Heck, there are cities that are setting up shooting galleries where people can shoot heroin in a safe place with a clean needle. Well, Inga Fricklin joins me now, who's a former assistant state prosecutor in Chicago, policy advisor to Afghanistan, and Law Enforcement Action Partnership, LEAP, board member. Ms. Fricklin, thank you very much for joining me today.
Well, thank you very much for asking me.
Is it a good idea to decriminalize or defelonize the use or possession of heroin?
The new statute under this House Bill 2355 really has not decriminalized it, but it has defelonized it.
Yeah, that's what I said.
And yes, I think it's an excellent idea. It's a step in the right direction.
Why?
Why? Because so many of the problems that we have, especially with drugs like heroin, cocaine, meth, are because of the fact that it's illegal. If you think back to prohibition of alcohol during the 1920s, remember Al Capone and all that?
Oh, yeah.
Anytime you get a product that people want, but which has been declared illegal, the criminal market's going to supply it.
Well, you just made the point. You just made the point, though. This does not make it legal. It still will be a misdemeanor to sell it, to buy it, to possess it, to use it. So it doesn't make it legal, as alcohol was finally made legal by the change
right.
in the Constitution.
So I say it's a step in the right direction, but it's not all the way there yet. But it's certainly an improvement for people to end up with a misdemeanor conviction rather than a felony conviction. That's an important step.
Well, tell me this then. Your ultimate goal then would be to see heroin legalized in America?
Yes.
As a recreational drug?
No on that. Now, for marijuana, which is now quite legal in Oregon, yeah, I think there's some real recreational potential, just as there is for our craft beer. But the word legalization, I wish we had another word to use because it sounds so much like seal of approval. And I really can't think of any good reasons for using heroin. People fall into it, and this is very unfortunate.
Well, it's a destructive drug. How would legalization make society better if, as you say, the ultimate goal is to make it legal? How would American society be if people knew that they could use heroin, and I can't think of another reason to use it other than recreationally, so that people can get high? What would America look like if people could simply use heroin anytime they want and be high anytime they want? And I assume then at some point you'd have to both produce the poppies, produce the drug, and sell it through some kind of legal mechanism. How would that make us all better off?
Well, I think we would be better off because the deaths that are occurring right now are largely because of the adulterants that go into heroin, things like fentanyl. Now, take an example of Switzerland, which ever since 1994, it has been legal for any self-described heroin addict to go to a government clinic, shoot up with heroin supplied by the clinic. Now, we're not talking just about clean needles, but actually pure heroin. There hasn't been a death, in contrast to what we've got in this country. They find HIV transmission is down, hepatitis transmission is down, crime is way down. And essentially what's being done there is putting people on heroin maintenance if they are unable to get off it. And then some people will try to get off it, and treatment is readily available. And it's also become much less attractive to young people, because a government clinic with pure stuff has competed with the shooting galleries, which were social recruitment sites.
But aren't these people going to be chasing a high then the whole time that they're addicted, and their addiction is not going to go away?
That's entirely possible. But, you know, we keep people on maintenance for cholesterol, for high blood pressure.
But Ms. Fricklin, nobody wants to have high cholesterol, and you don't get enjoyment out of high cholesterol. But as I understand it, people get a lot of enjoyment out of getting high on heroin, and that as they develop a tolerance, they may want a larger and larger dose so they can get a better and better high. And it sounds like that's a road toward somebody eventually overdosing or simply becoming incapacitated by the drug. And when they can't work anymore, when they can't be productive anymore, who's going to support them and who's going to support their drug habit? Because right now, many of them support their drug habit either by selling drugs or by stealing from people.
Sure. And that's why the Switzerland experiment is so interesting to look at. They are finding that people are managing to get themselves off because treatment is offered, which is very hard to come by in this country, by getting a maintenance dose at a clinic. And they know that it's not going to be adulterated with fentanyl or something deadly. You know, we use the word overdose of heroin in this country, but there aren't that many people dying of pure heroin. It's the additives that are killing them.
The additives that they add to get a greater high.
No, it's what's added by the criminals who are selling the stuff, because if they cut the product, they can keep their profits up and they don't care who dies. Now, during prohibition of alcohol, literally hundreds of Americans died of poisoned alcohol because the criminal market, the sellers, they really don't care. So part of what a move toward legalization, which would permit regulation, is that it's taking the market away from the criminal element.
Unless people decide to continue to obtain it illegally, which you mentioned the legalization of pot in Colorado, in Washington, and Oregon, there's still an illegal marketplace for those drugs, even though they're sold legally at state-authorized stores. So why would there not also be an additional market? In fact, I'm aware from the police that people who are on methadone will often take their methadone dose and then go out and chase some heroin as well, because they believe that they want to get high. They don't just want to be maintained.
Yeah. Well, there's really no perfect solution to something which happens to be widely available on this planet. And human beings, for whatever reason, you know, are susceptible to things that will get them high. You know, if there is any product on the planet, whether it's grain, fruit, cocoa leaves, marijuana, opium poppy, if there's anything that can be distilled, smoked, in order to produce a high, human beings have tried it. They just seem to be built that way.
Ms. Fricklin, is there any value at all to what is currently done now? When you say treatment is hard to get, it's paid for by Medicaid right now, and treatment is available. So If somebody is told you've been caught, you may be facing down the barrel of a felony, but if you'll go into treatment, we'll forgive the felony and you won't end up with a record at all. And people go into treatment in many cases, and some of them stick with it. You want them to simply not have that incentive anymore, because the law won't have any way to say we want you to get treatment, because the legal system will have said it's okay for you to stay high for the rest of your life if you choose to.
But why is it that we insist that someone not get high?
Because it doesn't fit in with our society. I would imagine that if I don't shoot heroin, I never have, but if I got high on heroin, I probably wouldn't want to show up at work at 6 o'clock in the morning. I wouldn't want to work all day. I wouldn't want to be productive. I might not attend to my other responsibilities, to my family. That's why there's a downside to both being drunk all the time or high all the time.
Yeah. But is the way to achieve that making the substance illegal? When something's illegal, the criminal market makes all the decisions about who to sell it to, such as kids, what to adulterate it with. And there are the connections with the various criminal cartels going back to Mexico and Central America.
Would you also be in favor of legalizing methamphetamine and cocaine?
Yes. And again, legalization means take it out of the criminal justice system so that it can be regulated, just like the larger society regulates alcohol and tobacco. Legalization does not mean anything goes. Same thing with prescription medications. These aren't illegal, but they are fairly closely controlled who has access to them. So the question is not whether there's going to be a wide open anything goes, sell them to kids. Rather, it's let's put the adults in the community, the responsible people, in charge of decisions rather than leaving everything up to the criminal suppliers.
I suppose along with legalization, you'd insist that that employers or potential employers stop doing drug qualification tests.
Well, for private sector, I mean, employers can do pretty much what they want.
They can't. They're highly regulated by both the federal and the state government. So would you still let that employer say, I don't want people working for me who have a drug addiction?
They could certainly, I think, do that. Though we need to ask some questions about why we are so widely testing people for drugs. I mean, we absolutely do not want airline pilots and truck drivers and people operating heavy machinery.
How about nurses and doctors and child care workers and people who handle money and people who run equipment of almost any kind, people who work in a sawmill or in a lumber yard or any kind of manufacturing plant? Do you want them to come to work just a little bit high on heroin or coke or methamphetamine?
No, it's perfectly reasonable to say that you cannot come to work high any more than you can come to work drunk on alcohol, which happens to be legal. But you don't tell a person, hey, you can't have a job if you had a beer over the weekend.
Ms. Frickland, it's a pleasure to have you on the program. I can't agree with you, but I appreciate your time.
Well, I'm certainly happy to talk about it. And remember, legalization does not mean anything goes. It means let's put the responsible adults in charge.
Thank you very much. Inger Frickland, who is a former assistant state prosecutor in Chicago, you're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Wow, I haven't had an interview like that in a while where somebody said, yeah, let's just legalize it all. Meth, cocaine, heroin, do it all, and then you can go to work and just worry that the guy driving the forklift didn't do a little shooting up during his lunch break or before he came to work. And you know, the thing is, there is a way to drink alcohol and then go 10 hours bottle to throttle and not be high. But how do you do that with heroin exactly? Let's go to Jimmy in Salem. Hey, Jimmy, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, first-time caller, long-time listener.
Thank you.
I got to say, after listening to everyone's opinion and researching it myself, I'm really concerned. I mean, if we actually allow this to go through and if we defelonize heroin, what's going to be next? How is our healthcare system going to deal with overdoses? And again, what if someone shows up after the weekend and having a good time? And what are going to be the further repercussions? What's going to be the next drug that comes up?
Let's start by not saying if, because Jimmy, you know that big building in the downtown of your hometown with the gold bowling trophy on top? They've defelonized, and the reason she made that distinction is it'll still be a misdemeanor, but they have taken the felony out of it. So they've already done it with heroin, and I'm with you. She, I think, is an example of the person who's going to say, yeah, now that we've decriminalized or defelonized heroin, let's do it to meth. Let's do it to cocaine. And you think about the kind of damage that people do to themselves. But if they have single-payer health care, like I think the Democrats are still trying to deliver, they won't have to worry because you and I will be paying the tab when they end up spending a couple of days in intensive care after a really bad overdose. But they'll have their lives saved, and we'll get the bill.
That's going to hurt us in the long run because already it's hard enough to get by as it is in this economy, and then our paychecks for paying that off is going to get damaged even more. So it's just going to become more corrosive to our society. And then when asked, why not, weren't we raised with the ethical and moral standards to not walk around or perform actions in society with altered states of consciousness?
Yep.
That makes me a little uneasy as well. So that's where I stand. I'm against the defelonizing part. And I just wanted to say thanks for the work and thanks for letting me throw my word in.
Jimmy, thank you very much. I appreciate the phone call. Let's go to a naysayer, Ryan. Ryan, I love naysayers. What's on your mind?
Hi, yes. I got to get it off the speaker first.
Please.
Okay, hello?
Yes.
Hi. Well, I would just like to say that the point of decriminalizing heroin, I believe, for the first timers. I have a very good friend that used to do drugs, and that was one of his things he wanted to try before he quit. And he did it one time, and right now, the guy got his head on straight and works and does really well in life. And I just couldn't imagine him having a felony on his record.
Well, he wouldn't have to. If you say he quit right now, before this change by the legislature, if you got caught with heroin, you were offered the chance to go into treatment, get off the drugs, and not have a felony on your record. But if they get rid of that felony, as I say, they already have voted, and the governor's going to sign this bill, so they will have defelonized it. Then what will we use to incentivize people to get treatment? And what do you suppose your friend would be like if he had not quit heroin very quickly?
Well, not everybody who does heroin is going to be a drug addict. Not everybody who picks up a drink becomes an alcoholic or is an alcoholic. I hear you, Lars.
Well, hold on. Do you speak from personal experience?
I do. I'm in a methadone program myself.
So you are a former heroin addict?
Yes.
Okay. How long?
And I use methadone every day in my life.
Can I ask you?
I tell you what. I'm able to function.
Can I ask you how long you've been on methadone?
2 years.
How soon do you expect to get off of it altogether?
Well, everybody has their own plan.
Well, I mean, are we talking a year? Are we talking 2 years? Or are we just going to maintain? We're going to maintain you. Go ahead.
I was told, generalizing, a person, it could take up to 2 to 3 years for a person when they enter the program, and when they successfully leave, it could take up to 3, sometimes even 4 years.
Have you been tapering down on your dose of methadone?
I am. I just started tapering.
So you were on it for 2 years before they started tapering you down, and it may take you 2 more years to get all the way off of it.
Yes, safely. Safely.
Why is it not safe for you to taper down over the next 6 months?
Oh, goodness. Well, because you just don't take, because it's a, this is what it's explained to me, that you can throw yourself back in through withdrawals if you go down too fast.
That's a good point. Yeah. Years and years of treatment. And guess who's paying the tab? You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I'll get back to your phone calls and emails here on the Radio Northwest Network on Conspiracy Theory Thursday in just a moment. But right now, it is a real pleasure to welcome to the program Washington Representative Bruce Chandler, a Republican from Granger, Washington, which is in the lower Yakima Valley. Representative Chandler, good to have you on the program.
It's great to be here, Lars. I appreciate the invitation.
So, the state of Washington now has a budget squeaked in just under the deadline in time to keep the state parks open over the 4th of July holiday. I want to know what you think of it, and then I've got a few specific questions about how this budget's going to work for Washington.
Well, I think that one thing is that it seems to be increasingly common that states around the country, I think there were at least four of our fellow states that were in the end unable to get a budget done on time. I would say that that's probably what my constituents are most annoyed about, is the fact that it dragged out for so long. And they're right. You know, I mean, the truth of the matter is, this is my 19th year in the legislature, and I've never seen any member of the legislature vote differently in July than they would have voted in March. So there really is no excuse for it.
Although there is a bit of a victory in that Jay Inslee, the governor, came in asking for massive tax increases, and you managed to make them less massive than they would have been if Inslee got his way.
Well, it is true that Democrats in general were looking to this year be an opportunity to simply double down on spending. And I do feel that, and I really am grateful for a lot of the House members that I work with, that we were able to stand against that to find, have cooler heads prevail. However, it took quite a long time to get there.
Representative Chandler, here's the concern I have. As a Washington state taxpayer, I look at the way that governments spend money, both Oregon and Washington. How fast, on an average annual basis, is the state of Washington's budget increasing?
Well, it is true that under the governor's budget, it would have increased about actually close to 15-16% in the next 4 years. The House Democrat budget tax increases would have doubled that. They would be about 10% over the next 4 years. I think that the budget as it passed should be between 4 and 4.5% larger, and that pretty well tracks the economic growth.
Well,
and the forecast.
Do you think the average folks out there who are paying taxes in Washington State are seeing average annual pay increases of 4 or 4.5%?
Well, I believe that this was not a perfect budget, but it was one that I think can be sustainable. We do have an opportunity next year to come back and adjust it if things are not going as we thought. But we also, I believe, got some success in changing some of the relationships between bargaining groups and the state, and that we got, I think, some efficiencies. You know, I'm still reviewing all the things that the governor vetoed, and there were some things that made it better for taxpayers that he apparently didn't like. So, we aren't done working on it.
Well, I mean, when you say you improve the relationships with the bargaining units, you meaning the unions back down to some extent? So what kind of increases are they looking at? Because when I hear 4 or 4.5%, I don't know many people are getting a 4.5% bump in their paycheck every year. And if over the next 10 years, let's say, the state grows at that rate and takes 45% more in taxes, but their constituents' paychecks only grow by 20% or 25 or 30% over that time, you're taking a bite out of the livelihood of Washingtonians.
No, that's over the 2-year budget.
Right. No, you said 4.5% per year, or 4.5% over 2 years?
Over 2 years.
So 2.2%. So that is pretty close to the rate of inflation and the likely rate of pay raises.
And for some new employees, and yeah. I mean, it's not unusual for agencies to remit money back to the Treasury, you know, that ends up not being needed. And but I think that we'll have an opportunity to take a look next January and see what adjustments can be made then, too.
Well, when you say I would applaud any state agency that actually returns some money, but out of the all funds budget of the state, what is the all funds budget? Do you happen to know, roughly?
It's right about this current biennium, which just ended. It was right about $39 billion. I think it will be in 4 years, it will be up to about 43.5, 44 billion.
Billion. And that's the all funds budget or the general fund budget? Because there is a difference.
That's the general fund.
Oh, the general fund. So the all funds is all much bigger.
All funds is about twice that. And that is largely federal money. And that's just based principally on what the present, interaction between the federal and the state is right now. We don't really know. One of the things that I think merits concern that we're going to be following closely is what the federal government and what Congress does on health care, which is where the biggest part of the budget, federal money.
And is that because of Medicaid primarily? That's the biggest chunk?
I'm not sure if it's the biggest yet, but I will say that we made the mistake of doing the Medicaid
expansion.
And we're carrying the burden for that. Yeah,
and so the all funds budget to run the state of Washington for 2 years is in the range of $80 billion.
Yes.
When you talk about state agencies kicking a few bucks back to the Treasury, how much of that $80 billion gets kicked back to the Treasury where the agency says, we didn't need this, we got the job done for a little less? Do you have any idea?
It's nominal. It's about 3%, maybe.
3%. You think they could work that one a little bit harder?
We are working on trying to work it harder. There were a number of the things that the governor chose to veto were would have evaluated some of the activities in different agencies that that would help us determine whether next year we should make a reduction or not. We sometimes don't have the information we need between the legislative and executive branch.
Do you think they want to give you the information you need?
I believe that there are people in the executive branch that have ideas that they would like that would be innovative, that they would like to get out, and there's a number of us that want to try and help them do that.
Representative Chandler, it's a pleasure to have you on. Thanks for 20 years.
Well, I want to thank you for what you do, and I look forward to hearing from all our constituents.
We'll be glad to have you back on. Thank you very much. That's Representative Bruce Chandler from the Lower Yakima Valley, who represented his constituents in the legislature. To your calls now, let me go to, boy, do we have a bunch of naysayers as well. Let's go to Patrick in Kelso. Hey, Patrick, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Hi, Lars. I wanted to get back to your...
Patrick, are you on a speakerphone?
No, I'm on a headphone.
Oh, okay. That's a little, makes you a little, sounds like you're calling in from Mars. There you go.
Gotcha. Are you still there? Can
there
you hear
you
me?
Go. You betcha. What's on your mind?
Great. You know, I wanted to talk about the guest, Ms. Strickland. You know, she sounds like somebody who's simply tired. You know, tired of dealing with these opiate folks in the legal system and wants to simply find a way to throw her hands in the air and not have to deal with it anymore. And I honestly feel like, you know, it's giving up on folks that really need our help. In addition, she's applying what I would consider rational thinking to an irrational disease. And, you know, to think that if you legalize it, people can make a choice like picking a grocery store as to whether they're going to continue with using their heroin any longer, I think is ridiculous. It's not proven. And, you know, losing sight of what's really important in supporting these folks, I guess, is a bit of a tragedy in light of the type of work that she does. And, you know, I've also got some particular interest in this. I work as a pharmacist and just completed some graduate work in public health. And I thought I would look at a different angle of why we're seeing such an increase in opiate overdose death.
All right.
So I did a I'm sorry.
No, I said all right. I'd like to hear it.
Oh, yeah. I did a 6-year retrospective review at the Cowlitz County Coroner's Office in Washington and found some pretty unique data associated with folks that died from what was considered opiate overdose deaths.
All right. Tell us what you concluded, because we don't have an unlimited amount of time, but what did you find?
The bottom line is that the vast majority of those folks that would consider an opiate overdose deaths actually had serum levels that were below the toxic range. Subsequently, that means there's something else going on, which would give rise to why we really don't know why there's such an increase in opiate overdose deaths. And what I found is that what I believe is that drugs like Prozac and Paxil are actually contributing to these deaths, and it has to do with opiate overdose or opiate users having an increased vascular aging. So it's kind of like putting a drug like Paxil or Prozac in an elderly person. What happens is it causes their blood pressure to drop. So what the data shows is that these people really aren't, the increase isn't related to simple excessive use or taking too much and dying. It has to deal with a potential drug interaction that's not entirely fully understood, solely based on the drug serum levels that we found. And most of the serum levels of those folks that died were under the toxic range, which is not a lot.
If I understand this right, you know, a classic overdose, you shoot too much of the heroin, it overcomes your body's ability to deal with it, you stop breathing, your heart stops, and you die. You're saying that
pathway of narcosis, right?
Yeah, use of it over a period of time, though, is just hard on your body and ends up killing you eventually. Yes?
No, what it does, it increases the age of your vascular system. So if
your blood
you use
vessels.
Heroin, for example, for 2 or 3 years, your vascular system will look like somebody who's 20 or 30 years older. And so if you add other drugs to that, like Paxil or Prozac, that cause blood pressure irregularities in elderly people, it's like putting that drug in an elderly person. So what we believe is really happening is that these people are not dying from overdose. they're dying from something called syncope. In other words, their blood pressure drops out and they can't recover. And what led us down that direction is the fact that most of these folks had serum levels that were below the toxic range, which, again, is not an expected find. And interesting, when looking at some of the site-specific reports, how they were found is also rather concerning, because many of them were found in the study group, the cohorts, in positions that would be more consistent with an acute event, like somebody collapsed. And so it also explains, in addition, why so many people die in bathtubs, having to do with relaxing them too much. It contributes to the blood pressure dropping. So it's what I think is a perfect storm of drug interaction as compared to what we currently normal assumptions that say that people are simply just using too much and dying.
That's a good point. Thank you very much, and I appreciate the insights. Back in a moment. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I saw this story out of Eugene where folks listen on KPNW about EWEB, which is the Eugene Water and Electric Board. It is a government-run facility that supplies electric and water service. I was once a customer of theirs decades ago when I lived down there. They are announcing this week that they are cutting 55 positions under a budget. They have excess money right now, so they're not cutting because they don't have the money. They're cutting because they can run the thing more efficiently, and I applaud them for doing that. They also say that even though the cost of their electricity that they buy from the Bonneville Power Administration is going up 2.3%, they're not going to pass the cost increase along to customers because they have excess money. And they have enough excess money that they say they may just hand it out to customers in a dividend of $60 per customer. I would like to know what the secret is and whether or not we can apply that same thinking that's going on at EWEB at a lot of other state and city and county agencies all over the Northwest. I'm going to see if we can get somebody from EWEB on to describe how they got it done. Let's go to Ron. Hey, Ron, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Lars, I want to address the situation with Josh Marquis. I'm going to tell you something. As a person, I lost my stepbrother 2 years ago to meth. Let me tell you, the triple changes of the legislators, Kotek, Kozanski and Williamson,
yep,
along with Dembro, you might as well call it quad threat. They don't care about us people. Lars, I've been to that thing. They've gone through them for a few car money. Everybody go to public hearings and everything else, and then they go through and they move it around. They hide it under other bills, gutting stuff, and they have no honor to us people, the people of Oregon. And here's the long-term effects, Lars. You're starting to see it in the Seattle where they decriminalize various stuff. You're starting to see it back east, even from that lady that you talked to from Chicago. Have the free clinics in New York, Chicago, various other utopian cities worked? No, it has not. Crime rates, crime rates gone up. I know teenagers in the three county areas that I live in Polk County, but in Lynn and Marion County, heroin is cheaper than a Vicodin pill, which you can buy for $4 off the streets.
Now imagine if you make it legal and they no longer stop the dealers and they no longer stop the people who are distributing it, then the price will go down even more. It'll become more available and more ubiquitous.
And here's the thing is, Lars, the overall situation is that I feel like by them going through doing this, it's no different than what they did in the Boxer Rebellion in China. How do I get the labor? How can I push my things through? How can I push my agenda across? If I go through and feed the rabble some good food, give them Kool-Aid, let them go kumbaya, and then tie the hands that they will be bound to.
You got the Lars Larson Show.